If what you want is real, Relevant Hunting, you are in the right place. With moderator Josh Miller, owner of Triple Point Outdoors, co-host Kevin Cook, owner of the Outdoor Pro Shop, and Brian Keitlinger, athlete and creator of Left in the Field Outdoors. Welcome to the Reinvent the Hunt podcast.
All right, everybody. Well, welcome back to the Reinvent the Hunt podcast. We're excited to have this episode on, episode 9 already. I'm Josh from Triple Point Outdoors. We've got the usual suspects, Kevin from the Outdoor Pro Shop down there, and Brian from Left in the Field Outdoors. And then tonight we have Nick from Warbucks Deer Groom Recovery in, was it Berlin Center, Ohio, Nick?
Yep.
Okay, so that's where, like, north, east of Akron, right?
It's like by, it's by Canfield and Salem, like right in that area.
Okay, awesome. I'll tell you what, we had some crazy weather that's been rolling through here in Ohio. I know Brian and PA's got, what, 10 inches of rain in the past week or something?
Oh, yeah. And we're getting those storms coming our way from you guys. Thanks.
Yeah, hang on. Hang on to it, because it's crazy. I know there's all kinds of water flowing over here and everybody running around picking up branches and stuff. So hoping for like a two-month drought. But I know, you know, obviously it's great for the raw mushrooms and such. And post turkey season is about upon us here in Ohio, about 15 more days before I head out with a bear persists and try to launch a new closed cut plus turkey foot through one. So hopefully I can hit those vitals. I know they're pretty small, but we're looking forward to it. I might have to call Nick for my turkey drone recovery.
Yeah, for sure.
Or just chase it down and jump on it like a video was floating around Facebook. It might be fun too. So I want to thank Nick for coming on. Nick, I know this is a really interesting and also obviously at some points highly controversial topic. We like to talk about real things here in the podcast and just things that are new technology affecting hunting and how they cross over, and then obviously pros and cons, and, you know, kind of critique how we feel about it and be real from the perspective of hunters. So Nick, kind of tell us about the nuts and bolts of how it works and how you started this.
All right. So my uncle and I, we're big hunters, and I see on Facebook a lot of times, like, people saying, hey, I shot a deer and I can't find it, or I have blood and, you know, I had a dog on it and it got up and it ran away. So, you know, Mike Yoder, he's the guy that basically the founding father of the drone recovery business. And I seen those videos and I'm like, you know what, that's something real cool that I can get into. And, you know, we picked up a drone and we went on a couple calls. Realistically, this thing is a lot nicer than dogs. Dogs are nice, but if you like took a bad shot on a deer and it's not a kill shot, you know, if it's a liver shot or something, when that dog gets up there, you know, deer are going to fight. They want to live. So they're going to get up and keep tracking. But I got this beast of a drone right here. This is the Matrix 30T. It has a thermal drone camera on it. It's all folded up. It opens up. It's actually a pretty wide beast. You could fly this thing in torrential downpour that we're having right now, the weather that we're having. You could fly this in 50-mile-per-hour winds. It's equipped with a thermal drone that picks up heat signatures, which is very crucial in the tracking business. And how really this goes, someone gives me a call. I have stuff posted all over Facebook. They give me a call and they'll be like, hey, I just shot a deer and I think I got a pretty good shot on it. So, you know, we start communicating, talking. And one of the downfalls with the drone is you can't go everywhere with it. The FAA has a lot of rules and regulations where you can fly and can't fly. So if you're near an airport, 9 times out of 10, I'm probably not going to be able to come out there and help you fly. So one of the first questions I ask someone is, where are you located? So I type in their address into this fly app and see if I'm able to fly before I further on the conversation, because I don't want to get too deep into something that I can't do. And then after that, we talk about if they found blood, if they found their arrow, what does the blood look like? Because, you know, sometimes not every shot's going to be a kill shot. You know, you wish for it. Yep. You might hit the stomach. And honestly, I've been on some crazy tracks this year that I've seen people shoot the deer perfectly, like right behind the shoulder where you're supposed to, the right fundamentals and everything, clean pass through, and that deer still goes. Like, I cannot believe how tough deer are. Found that out this year. We dove real deep into it, and it's an incredible technology. You know, I'm very proud to have it. Some pros of it You could find the deer pretty quickly. People get real excited. I love seeing people's energy when you like find their deer. They're like, oh my God, that's my deer. Oh, and they're screaming. I've had guys cry. I've had like, oh man, I had this grown guy that he's been chasing this deer for 5 years on his property, you know, and he finally got the opportunity on it. But you know, we're all hunters, you know, you get that shake and you're shaking when you're about to pull the trigger, and he took a bad shot on it. But hey, we found that deer. We actually tracked it for the first day. We found it was laying. It wasn't too good. And I'm like, hey, bud, I'm going to come back out in the morning. We'll look. We'll check this thing for you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, believe it or not, great shot. It was found 1,000 yards from where it was last seen. So we're like, hey, buddy, you know, realistically, you're not supposed to, like, keep following a deer if it's wounded. With, like, there's a lot of laws. And, you know, a lot of people are like, hey, that's not hunting. So I told the guy, hey, you know, I'm going to seize this fly because I don't want to get in any trouble or anything. And he was cool with it. So, the pros I would say is that when you see a down deer, people want you, they want to get all geared up and get their bow or whatever, get their gun and go back out there. But realistically, you can't do that. That is against the law. That is like pursuing an animal with the drone, which is illegal. You can use it after it's shot and no one's using any equipment. Bows, guns are all put in the truck. You know, you can pursue the deer after that. Another con is early season. You know, you're eager to get out there. You've been having a deer on trail camera all year. You're really want to get it done. You want to seal the deal. Well, in the early season, you got these leaves on the trees, and thermal, it's an incredible technology, but, it's not super powerful. Like, you can't look through leaves and branches. Mm-hmm. So the downfall on that is early season, the first couple of weeks, it's not really good for a drone to be out there, honestly. And I tell guys that, like, I want to be open as possible with them because, you know, I want a good name for us. And also I want to complete these stories for these hunters. You know, if you're chasing something, you're spending all this money, I want you to find it, you know, like that's my reason that I go out there. And another thing, another big con, like you get excited, you shoot a monster buck, like it might be the biggest buck you ever shot in your life. You want to get out of that stand and start looking for it. But I always advise people, listen, do not chase after that deer. Cause if that deer gets up, no saying where it's going to go. And yeah, I have a beast of a drone, but it's not always going to find it. If you think we're going to need to be looking over here and it's all the way over here, 9 times out of 10, I'm not going to find it. If you think we need to look up here, there are a lot of pros and cons, but, it's effective. It's fast. You don't need to be walking through the woods all day with a dog getting tore up by jaggers. In and out. It's cold. You don't want to be out in the woods too long. You just want to be right on it. So those are some of the pros.
It's incredible technology. I know you probably have a ton of questions. I know you guys probably do as well. I know I personally do. This is something that it's a service. It's interesting crossover because obviously with our Broadhead company, the whole intent of Broadhead company is put the deer down and the animal down as fast and efficiently as possible to expire it and be able to harvest it and get the meat first and then trophy later. But I think coupled with your technology, you know, these are all technologies that, like anything, like a cell phone or whatever technology you're using, when used effectively, are really great for the hunting community. And you're going to run into situations every once in a while where somebody might try to be using it for an advantageous hunt or something they shouldn't be doing. And you know, that's a bad lemon, and it's society and it's the world, and we're all going to experience from even people like that sometimes. But I think what your statement is saying is, you know, you want to recover these deer as quickly as possible in the most humane manner available. And I think it's a huge technology step forward, you know, even maybe coupled with dogs. Some guy or some gal out there is like, you know, hey, I want to do it by myself first and then go that second step. And I think it's almost a responsibility of the hunter, guys. What do you feel?
I agree it's responsible for the hunter. And, you know, I used Nick's service this year, and like I said, super professional. And again, you know, I never even got out of the stand. I called Nick and I was like, hey, I shot this buck. They've been down there once before, and I, you know, said I don't want it to go into the river. Mm-hmm. And Nick even brought his baby out that day with his uncle. Remember that? Yeah. Nick?
Oh, I remember that. That was a crazy one.
That's cool, though.
I said that, you know.
That's real.
And it didn't, it honestly, it, you wouldn't have been able to use a dog to track that deer that day because you would have went through multiple different properties. Plus, it swam across the river. And again, it did not take long for us to find that deer. And the coolest part about it was, is, you know, once they located it, we drove to another spot to just check on it. And they pull out this other drone. Nick's flying this drone and he's whistling into the controller and clapping. And we could hear everything. And I'm like, man, it's not that far away. He's like, yeah, it's just right over there. Mm-hmm. And again, that's the deer I ended up having, you know, getting stolen, you know, and Nick's uncle, it's your uncle, right, Tony?
Yeah. No, Paul.
Yeah. Paul. And he came back and he like looked through all the river and even got in the boat. He's like, nah, that someone nabbed that deer. It's gone. I think it's a fantastic ethical thing. It's like anything else. There are going to be a small portion of people who are going to abuse it.
Right.
The rest of people are going to do it the right way. The people like Nick and Paul are hunters. They're professional. You know, they're going to do it right. I mean, it's a great business. It's a great livelihood. You're not going to step around the lines and stuff, you know. At any point in time, if they're not comfortable, I mean, they can just shut it down, be like, we're not doing this.
The one thing I think about property lines is really good about the drone. The FAA states that you could fly anywhere, and you don't have to, like, when you're with the dog, you have to get permission of each property. And that deer might have went like four or five properties.
Yep.
With the drone, and I use Onyx a lot, I fly up, I find that deer, I pinpoint it, I get the coordinates, I type it in my phone, and it will tell me exactly whose property that is. And, that's the right way to do it. You want to get that permission.
I have a quick question to jump in, because I heard from somebody, I want to get this clarified. Is there, like, I was doing this with my hands, someone told me there's like a, if you took a property line, is it a 3D extent extrude up, you know, from your property line, you can fly the drone within that parameter, or can you go anywhere?
So the FAA states that no one owns the airspace. So airspace is considered like 100 feet over someone's house. I think it's actually a little lower than that. It varies in different locations. But as soon as you're up above 100 feet, the only person that can tell you not to fly is the FAA.
Okay. So you can go across lines. I can
fly
lines.
Right over properties, no problem. Just not prisons, airports, and governmental buildings.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a great situation in my opinion too, because then just, you know, you find a deer to cross that line, and instead of trying to walk across to find it or see it and try to rush across and do something inappropriate you shouldn't be doing, you can call the landowner and say, hey, may I retrieve this? Here it is. It's on the drone. You know, it's right there.
9 times out of 10, they will. If you're respectful and you ask for permission, instead of going behind their back, you're going to get it most times.
Yeah. Yep. The thing that amazed me that I immediately started to laugh about is once they got up in the air, they're like, oh, there's something. Oh, that's a squirrel. I'm like, you can see a friggin' squirrel.
That's cool.
And they're like, yeah. And then like, oh, there's two deer right there. And these deer weren't 50 yards from the stand that I just left. I mean, it's, you know, and now, you know, they're using it to do inventory, or, you know, they're going on and counting deer per square acre and things like that. You know, technology changes all the time. And again, you're going to have positive uses for it. You know, places ban trail cameras. I mean, was it Utah? Ban trail. I mean,
sure.
In different places.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you go about it doing it the right way. It's legal in Ohio. It's still not legal in Pennsylvania. And you saw the whole big thing that fell out of the Pennsylvania case, which is, I hope they get fixed. And other people are like, really? It's not legal to pursue a deer after you shoot it if it's dark? I mean, they'd opened up a whole big, huge can of worms that they're going to have to, you know, look at and, you know, and talk about. I've killed deer right at last light, heard them go down.
Yeah.
I go put my bow at home, come back and get it. Technically, I guess I was breaking the law because I was retrieving my deer after legal hunting hours. So it's like, okay, what are we going to do with that? Yeah.
Yeah, just do what we do in Ohio. But in turkey season, we say, for all grounds, public ground, run fast enough, right?
That's right.
Totally kidding. Kevin, how do you feel about it?
You can shoot a deer at last light, but you can't go retrieve it.
No, we can't. You can't do that, Brian. You can't do that.
No. Nick, if you've been following that case, one of the legislators said no.
I mean, it was so it was so bullshit because you know, I called game wardens and they told me in Pennsylvania that you were allowed to do it as long as no one's wearing camouflage and all the weapons are put away. And I said, cool. And then, you know, I talked to another one and they were like, absolutely no drones. And then I had another one told me that I can't fly a drone over state game land. So honestly, the wardens that went to school and they get paid and they're paid through the state, they don't even know the answer. So it's a big, it's wild.
Well, it's like AI, you know, AI technology is so new, it's ever changing and evolving. And you have, you know, political ramifications all over the place, throwing their opinions in like always. And one question I had is like public ground in Ohio. Can you do it on public ground, Nick, or not?
So I just say no, because usually public land's too far for me to drive. I try to stay within an hour of my home base, hour and a half, because there are a lot of other pilots and, you know, this is a team effort and I try to incorporate people from all around the state. I honestly don't know the law on it specifically, because I know you're not allowed to fly on game state lands, or land or take off. So,
man, that stuff freaks me out. I don't know about you guys, but like, you know, going to another state, there's so many, the laws are so varied ever. And I get it's a state by state situation. I respect that. But man, it makes it tough and kind of scary to think you want to screw up and make and violate something you don't even know you're doing, you know?
No, for sure.
Yeah. It is. It's just one of those things where you sometimes sit and, you know, scratch your head. You know, some of the things I've heard, especially here in PA, is if you are going to go out and retrieve a deer after you've killed it and the sun has gone down, like you said, not allowed to take weapons on this set, but you're supposed to call your local WCO or even the local branch and say, my name is this, and I'm here at my property and I'm retrieving a deer I killed, blah, 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 blah. You know, okay, a common courtesy, but I mean, I don't have the local WCA cell phone number on me to sit there and text and say, hey, I'm going to go get my deer that I killed on my property, you know, and everything else. But I mean, at least it opens the door for them to look at some things to maybe possibly change some verbiage or put some exact things in that will be beneficial. But I mean, they need to have hunters on these boards.
They need to have hunters on these, making these political rules, because people don't know. Sure. They don't know. They need to have hunters on these boards. You know, in Ohio, your deer is going to be coyote food overnight. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Just like the same fools making the gun laws.
Yeah. It boils down to, as hunters, we're expected to do everything we can legally to find that deer. And it just seems like, okay, there's another hurdle. There's another hurdle. There's another hurdle. You know, I don't know. I mean, that's why I guess it is, you know, controversial in some places. And we in Pennsylvania always seem to be way, way behind, you know, everything. I mean, we still can't hunt on Sundays, for crying out loud. They're trying to pass that this year, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, we're archaic with our blue laws and everything else.
Maryland's just getting past that. We're still not past it in every county. Like in some of the counties I can hunt, you can only hunt until 10:30 a.m. on a Sunday, certain Sundays. It's definitely ridiculous. If I told you about some of the Maryland state gun laws, oh my God. We'll be here all day. All night.
Yeah. So I do want to say, because there's going to be, I hope, millions of people watching this. So if you are going to get a drone pilot and you have a drone pilot come out to you, or you're going to call a drone pilot, you know, there's a couple things you want to make sure. You want to make sure I cover my address. You want to make sure that they have one of these Part 107s license, because without this, and your pilot, if he comes out there and he doesn't have that license and someone wants to be, you know, kind of a douchebag and call on you, which they should, you can lose your deer. You know, if you have someone that comes out and they don't have a license and you paid them, you can lose your deer. And obviously the pilot's going to be in a lot of trouble. Another thing to look for, this drone is the, like I said earlier, it's the 30T. It is very powerful. It can fly in rain, wind, very cold. I flew this thing actually in Cleveland last week with 61 mile per hour gust. Now, I landed this because this is a pretty penny. You know, this is about $10,000. But you want to make sure people have the right drone. You know, there's a lot of people going out there with these little drones and they're thermal. Great. You know, you might have paid $4,000 for it. That's incredible. Like, it's a good drone. Don't get me wrong. But if you're looking for a trophy and you're going to pay someone $400, you better make sure they have the right equipment. And you know, I get a lot of kickback from these other drone pilots because I made this map where all the drone pilots are listed throughout the state. So if I get a call, I send them somewhere.
We'll post that, by the way, too, for you. That was a good map.
For sure. Hey, I appreciate that. But you know, a lot of those guys, they come out there and charge $400 and they only fly for 30 minutes or an hour. You know, I like to stay out there until the hunter's like, you know what, I had enough. I can't do this. I've flown for 6 hours one day just to make sure I found that deer, because I want to make sure I find it. I'm not out there for money. I'm out there for the, like, the memories, you know, like, this is going to be incredible. You know, like, I hunted with my grandpa and my uncle, and I learned everything from them. And, you know, I want my kids to hunt. And, you know, when I see the kids hunting with their grandpa and they give me a call, you know, it tickles my heart a little bit. You know, it makes me feel real good to see the younger generations out there.
You bet.
But yeah, those are big things you want to make sure. Make sure they have a license and make sure they have a good drone. And, you know, their replicable name, they have a generator, because each battery has about an hour of flight time. And you want to make sure they're equipped, because you don't want to fork $400 for a dud, you know. And just make sure you have the right pilot, because there are a lot of pilots out there and a lot of guys just getting into this, and they're just worried about the money. Yeah. You know, like, I worry more about, like, what people are going to say about the business. And I got the good things are what spreads a lot faster. When you say something bad, you know, that just destroys people's businesses. So I always try to make sure I do everything I can.
That's phenomenal. We really appreciate all the knowledge that you bring into this. And I'll tell you, I'm thinking back of a personal story I have with my dad, actually. We were hunting public ground, and I was at a great spot. You know, he was probably 200 yards from me, all archery, had my vertical bow. It's been probably 10 years ago now, before the drone, you know, technology blew up. And I had a really, it was during the rut, really nice, huge, you know, 160 heavy 10 point frame come in, just a beast of a buck behind a hot doe. And she came right by me, and he hung up at about 40 yards, and he ended up going broadside. And I had one window in the V of the tree, and I was not liking the shot at all. I had one shot opportunity, and he stepped and he stopped right in the V of the tree. And I was waiting on him, and he stopped right there and paused. And I went bat and let go. Okay. And the timing was so horrible. As I let go and took a shot, he took a step forward. Inadvertently, just a timing situation, right? He didn't know it was coming at him. Stepped forward and hit him back through the liver, straight through, arrows hanging out the other side. It wasn't our broadhead. It was a different broadhead at that point in time. But I got full penetration through the deer. And he lurched forward, didn't go toward my dad, and went hooked to the right or around me. Let him go about, you know, half an hour, got down, started looking around for arrow recovery. Couldn't find it. I knew it was in him, hanging out the other side. Blood everywhere, and it was public ground, so we knew, you know, well, let's start looking for this thing and see, you know, where we go with it, because it's public ground. And it went back and forth, got dark on us, and never recovered that deer. And, you know, obviously it's public ground, probably couldn't have found it in that situation anyway. But what I'm saying about the story is, as a bow hunter, we take, and I saw my wife about this earlier today, we take so many opportunities. There's an impala shot at yesterday with our Clovis in Africa, and the hunter, he actually messaged me at first and thought the broadhead skipped off the top of the scapula of the impala. Went back and looked at footage, and the impala just string jumped him so horribly because they're lightning fast. Happened to me with a heavy arrow set up and not a high bow speed in South Africa. Drops 18 inches. You know, the thousands of variables you're trying to take care of with a broadhead and archery shot are incomprehensible, but that's what makes it fun too. But we want to tell people out there that, you know, you're going to have bad shots. It's going to happen as a bow hunter. And you know, I've had several people, when you're young to bow hunting, say, well, wait a minute, you didn't recover every deer you ever shot? That's, what a horrible hunter. You know, and it's like, well, you don't understand what bow hunting is, because it's going to happen to you regardless of who you are and how much time you put in the woods. So having this drone recovery just ups the chances of recovering that meat, number one, and then obviously maybe a trophy for lifetime, number two.
Yeah, for sure.
So obviously you're not allowed to, you know, pursue deer with a drone. So if a hunter shot a deer, you found it with your drone, but it was still alive. When is that hunter legally allowed to go after that deer?
Like, so Ohio,
you're packed up and gone.
So Ohio, actually, the game warden came onto Facebook or posted somewhere on social media. I've seen it. And he said that you are allowed to pursue that deer as soon as that drone is put down, landed, and put in the case, folded up. Mm-hmm. You are actively allowed to pursue that as long as it's during hunting hours, you know.
Right.
You can't do it after night and stuff. But believe it or not, you know, cops are here to serve and protect. But when I go do recoveries for them, they might be, you know, a little, they want to go do something.
Well, you got those deer too that, you know, you hit with an archery shot, like you said, Nick, earlier, and it's a perfect shot, and you get one lung, and that deer's going to live up to, you know, 5 hours, 4 hours yet, even on one lung.
So needs to go 1,000 I have yards. A couple posts on Facebook. I actually had this couple, they called me. They were on a trip to go to Maine to go on a goose hunt or a duck hunt or something. And this lady took a beautiful shot on the deer. I watched the video. It was like 25 yards. It was angling a little bit, but straight past her, both sides. Nicked the lungs. There was a bunch of blood. And I found that deer that night still up. And it was with does, chasing does. Like during the rut, when they get that little bit of testosterone.
Oh, yeah. When,
man, yeah, they are gone. There's nothing stopping them.
They don't stop. There's the rut is great for, you know, getting a shot on a mature buck, but it's also a downfall because those deer don't stop during the rut. You could put a perfectly good shot on those deer, and they're just getting it. They don't care.
Yeah, I think she hit one lung, but you know, great blood. And we went back the next day because I felt bad. I'm like, you know, maybe he laid down and, you know, he dropped, like, you know, he's done. He expired. And I went back the next day and, no, he was still floating around. And, man, you know, she told me months later, she actually just texted me, I don't know, probably like March, February, because she has the trail cameras up year round. And he made it through the winter, you know, and he has a big scar on him. Like, it's patched up. You could tell he was hit. But, man, they are freaks during the rut. It is crazy.
Absolutely.
They're tough any other time. The rut just makes it work.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
So what's you have a crazy, insane, what's your craziest recovery story? You have one that like sticks out in your mind that you did, and just like this one is one you Brian's. Need to tell.
All right. I had this one call. I went out. This kid shot this buck, and we're flying, and I find this deer without its head on it. And I'm like, oh no, like, damn, I gotta tell him I'm on the remote. I'm looking at it, I'm zooming in, and there's like hair missing. Uh-oh. The coyotes hit him, you know, and the head's not missing. No, the head's missing. I'm like, oh shoot. But I'm up in the drone and I see these trails, like this trail going to this neighbor's house. And I'm like, oh my God. I follow the trail with the drone. It leads me to a four-wheeler. You know, I zoom in,
and
there's
man.
Boots. There's a looks to be a knife. I'm not too sure what it was. You know, I was 300 feet in the air, looking like 500 yards away. And, you know, the guy's like all pissed off because he just shot this buck. He heard the kids that night and he thought they took it. So, you know, we called the game warden. The game warden went over there. He asked the guy a couple questions and finds out that, you know, that he might have had a couple things that he wasn't supposed to have. I think he had a couple heads that he never tagged properly. And, you know, that kind of opened up a can of worms that I wasn't expecting to open. But then it wasn't the deer, as we went up to that deer and it was dead for a little bit. But the game warden said there must have been like an animal that climbed in it. And that's why I see the heat signature. But eventually I did find that deer. He shot it with a 4.4 Marlin. You know, if anyone knows any guns, that's a big round to get hit by. They usually just crumble. But took a front shot at the deer and hit the shoulder. And the deer went the opposite way. But it was an insane day because, you know, we thought that was it. You know, the game warden came and he went over there. He talked to the guy. We left because the game warden said, hey, I don't need you guys anymore. We gave him our business card. If you need any questions or anything, we'd be there for him. But he calls us back and we just turned the car around and went right back out there. And we found that deer for him. And it was an incredible story. It was the biggest deer he ever shot. I don't know. There's something about just finding someone's deer. Like, you get to relive that excitement of shooting another deer.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's just amazing to see him jump up. Like, you see, like, I don't know how old some of you guys are. I'm 27. But, like, you know, you see, like, 40, 50-year-olds out there, and they're jumping up excited. It's like Christmas morning all over again. And it's incredible. I love it.
He's calling you knife old, Brian, right there. I don't know if you feel that one. But
I'm sorry, guys.
I'll tell you what, 42, going up the hills anymore. It's starting to work on the knees and the hips. I'm going to start complaining and yell, get off my lawn pretty soon here. That's awesome. That's awesome. Man. So how do you guys overall feel, like, Brian and Kevin, like, would you use this service? I know, Brian, you have. I know, like, I mean, I would. I would do it. Hands down, I would
absolutely
do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, I think
That's right.
Now, I was just thinking about like our last episode, how we were talking about the stigma between crossbows. There's always going to be that select few people that are going to be like, oh, well, you know, you can't find a deer, blah, blah, blah. But
blah, blah, blah.
It's happened to all of us. And if it hasn't happened to you, you haven't been hunting enough.
Yep. Or you're lying.
Or you're not taking the risk.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's essential to have an opportunity, like you said, Nick, to relive that moment. But even better than that, you know, think about the money we all put into these sports, and, you know, talk about the bow and the broadhead and the arrows and the time and the leases. You know, I mean, especially if you're not going to ever have that mount or cover that meat, you know, especially now, think about the price of inflation and cost of food, you know, just cost of meat in general. It's worth covering that an animal out of respect, number one, for the hunter and the animal. And also, I think, Nick, you guys can do a good job, just like we talk about in this podcast, crossing over, you know, hunters and non-hunters to say, hey, listen, non-hunters, look what we're doing to make sure we recover these animals that we're hunting legally using a tool, you know?
Yeah, so I have we have Save the Mill Creek Deer people in my area, because I'm from Mahoning County, and they're all about saving the deer and stuff. But, you know, a lot of people don't understand, when you have so many animals in one area, you're going to create diseases. Yeah. You're going to hit a carrying capacity, and you know, deer are not going to be eating well because there's going to be so many. Like, there might be 50 does in one area. They're going to shred everything. They're going to shred the fields, cornfields, anything. And when you start to get them, you're going to get that chronic wasting disease. That is from a max, like just having too many deer in one area. You know, it just raises disease. And us hunters, you know, we help thin the herds and help conservation. Yeah. You know, our money for our hunting license, it goes to the wildlife, the hunt and fish people. They breed fish for us to fish. You know, they help with pheasant programs. They help with the youth programs. So all in all the money goes around in a good program. You know, it's not for the bad. You know, people think that hunting's so terrible, but where do you get your meat from? You know, I'd rather go shoot my deer than have a cow in a butcher shop all depressed, like knowing that like maybe his buddies are getting they're next, you know. I don't know. It's just...
yeah we're all about saving deer here at Remit Podcast. We save them in our freezer. You want to come by anytime?
Right. For sure,
frozen venison for you anytime. We just had tacos tonight. So I mean, if you've never had, you know, an exceptional quality meal from venison, elk, I had some of the best meat in the world was moose up in Newfoundland. Moose stew was I think 75 year old lady that ran this lodge. She cooked up my wife and I some moose stew one night with some bread and butter. I mean, it was a stick in your gut, meat and potatoes kind of meal that just rocks your world. And so I think that's important to get out there for people to understand, you know, it's not just technology. It's not just money floating around. This is an opportunity to bring people together rather than be devices like we talked about in this podcast. Try to get people to come together and understand why we hunt, what that passion is, and why it's in our human collective souls, you know?
No, absolutely.
Yeah. We want to thank you for coming on tonight, Nick, and the Warbucks Gear Driven Recovery. I'm sure there's going to be a lot more questions coming your way. Maybe we'll have you back on again and talk some more about what happens this fall and so forth. Brian and Kevin, thank you guys for coming again. Please like, watch, share, get us out there, get us a review for the Green Bay Hunt Podcast. Check out the Warbucks Gear Driven Recovery. We're going to be posting their website on the podcast, as well as some pictures and video. You'll find some things out there. I already saw some things. I saw Brian's thermal image, I'm pretty sure, of one of your deers. I think I saw it on the Facebook page. And so check it out. It's a really cool technology. I want to thank you for coming on.
Thank you very much.
All right, everybody out there, have a great night.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Take care.